The material that I'm going to share with you, I gleaned from Tom Robinson, but I think that you'll find it helpful and ties right in with the Days of Unleavened Bread. So I'd like to begin with a question, and that question is this: why do we eat unleavened bread? Why do we eat unleavened bread? Well, the first and probably the easiest answer is that God tells us to. So God tells us to eat unleavened bread in Exodus 12 and 13. He tells us the same thing in Leviticus 23, Deuteronomy 16, and specifically he says in 1 Corinthians 5, verse 7, "For indeed Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us. Therefore let us keep the feast, not with the old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." So God tells us that we are to keep the feast of the Days of Unleavened Bread, and we are to keep it with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. And there are more places that we could quote, but we're not going to go to those, but that gives you an understanding of the fact that we don't eat leavened bread, or eat unleavened bread, because God has commanded us to do so. So God doesn't just tell us to do this, to keep the Days of Unleavened Bread, without a purpose. And let's consider a second reason. It's found in Exodus chapter 12. Exodus chapter 12, and it has to do with haste in leaving Egypt. They were to leave Egypt in haste. In Exodus chapter 12, verse 31, it talks about leaving in haste and gives us a second reason why we are to keep the Days of Unleavened Bread. There it says in Exodus 12, verse 31, "Then he called for Moses and Aaron by night." And this is because of the death of the firstborn, and said, "Rise, go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord the Lord as you said. Also take your flocks, your herds, as you have said, and be gone, and bless me also." So Pharaoh was coming to realize there is a God in heaven, the God of Israel, and he's pretty serious, so please pray to him on my behalf. Exodus 12, verse 33 says, "And the Egyptians urged the people that they might send them out of the land in haste. For they said, 'We shall all be dead.' So the people took their dough before it was leavened, having their kneading bowls wound up in their clothes on their shoulders." So they were told to get out, and so they took their kneading troughs and loaded them up, and they were making their way out of the land. And in Exodus chapter 12, verse 37, let's go down there. It says there, "Then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot. Besides children, a mixed multitude went up with them also, and flocks and herds, a great deal of livestock." So they had 600,000 men. You also had women and children, as well as much livestock. Verse 39, "And they baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they had brought out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were driven out of Egypt and could not wait, nor had they prepared provisions for themselves." And this passage shows that Israel was driven out of Egypt. They had to leave in haste, so they didn't have time to make leavened bread, most assuredly, and they just had to make bread as they're traveling along and they're getting out of Egypt, and so they only had a short time, and so you would make the unleavened cakes and have those for food as they traveled along. As you consider this point, it's a little bit confusing because as you think about it, they knew they were going to have to leave. They knew they were going to have to leave. This was not some surprise. And it seems a little bit odd. There was some preparation for this. Why didn't they prepare? They had to prepare it for the eating the Passover lamb. Why didn't they make more? So they had to make it because they couldn't eat their bread that was leavened with the lamb. So they knew that they were going to have the days of unleavened bread following the Passover. This wasn't a surprise to them. Moses didn't tell them about the Passover, and they kept the Passover. Then, oh, by the way, you're going to have to get some unleavened bread together because we're leaving. That wasn't the case at all. They knew this was coming. So why couldn't they have some bread ready to go? Well, knowing they needed to prepare, they could have had leavened bread ready, and couldn't they have had everything ready to go? Well, it was something that took place in haste. And they were actually told in Exodus 12 to eat the lamb with bitter herbs and unleavened bread. They had prepared that unleavened bread, and it does seem odd that they weren't prepared, that unleavened bread wasn't prepared, because they knew in advance, but they didn't make that preparation. They had to leave in haste, so they didn't have any time to prepare new leavened bread. They had to get out, and that was their focus, so they didn't make it before they left. So we understand that there was an important symbolic aspect to this, and they had to be in haste to break with the corrupting past with their environment. They lived in a place that had turned against them. They had originally established themselves in the land of Egypt. They had been welcomed into Egypt, and they were living there. And then there was a point where you had a new ruler, and the policy changed, and they became antagonistic to Israel. And so Israel had to, they became slaves. They were forced to work, and we'll talk about that a little bit more and how that impacts unleavened bread. So they had to get out immediately, and they had to get out of the land because it was corrupt, and the longer they stayed there, the more corrupt they were going to become, because they were part of that society. They were an integral part of it because they were slaves, and they did much of the work that the Egyptians didn't want to do. But they had to get out. There was threat to life and limb because of the desire to destroy the people of Israel and to merge them with the Egyptians and eliminate the people of Israel as a people. And God said, get out. And they had become, the society had become so corrupt that they had to get out. And as you realize, as you look at the world today, here on this first day of unleavened bread, as you look around you and you think about the world is in the same state. Just as Egypt became so corrupt, they could no longer live there, you have to look at the society in which we live, that it is corrupt. It has become more corrupt, and we have moved. I just wonder if we have gone beyond the point of no return. But for us, where do we go? We don't have Moses. We don't have the cloud. Where do we go? So what we have to do is we have to leave in a sense of, I'm no longer part of this. We have to begin to live as part of God's kingdom and God's way of life. We have to leave it behind, and we have to say, I can't live this way. I can't be a part of this anymore. And this isn't our first year keeping the feast, but if we haven't made an effort to come out, then we better start. Because the world we see is around us is going away, and it's becoming a hostile environment, and we have to protect ourselves from what's going on around us. So they had to leave in haste. God said, you need to get out now. And so they got everything together, and they began moving out of the land. There's a third reason why we eat unleavened bread, and it's this. There is a spiritual picture of getting rid of or coming out of sin. We see that in 1 Corinthians 5, where Paul says, beginning in verse 7, "Therefore purge out the old leaven." Therefore purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. And, you know, that's what we did. Before Passover, we got the leaven out, so the leaven should be out of our lives, and at least to a certain extent. But it's an ongoing battle. It isn't resolved. So you went through and you vacuumed and you cleaned. So does that mean that your house is completely cleaned out of leaven? I don't think you can, because leaven floats in the air. And you may have gotten the big chunks out, but there's still leaven there. And there's not much we can do about it, no matter if you've got the greatest HEPA filter of all time. I don't think we can get rid of it all. And God doesn't expect that, but he wants us to understand what he's talking about when he talks about getting rid of the unleavened bread. So he says, "For indeed Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. Therefore let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness." So that's the old way. That's the way that we used to live. And he says here, we're to keep the feast with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. So there's a way that we are to keep it. And you know, it's a battle to keep leaven out of our lives and to keep it away from us. And it is an ongoing battle that we have to undertake every day. And it's a way of thinking. Oftentimes we may think that as you think about keeping unleavened bread, that this is a concept that the New Testament introduces. I mean, because Paul's talking about it. He's telling the Corinthians about it. Is it something that's new to the time in which Paul lived? And that's not the case at all. As you go back and you look at what was taking place among the Jews, some people consider they had no idea about this at all. Well, that's not true. When the Jews removed the leavening, they were just thinking about spring cleaning or something like that. That's not what the Jews were thinking about. They were memorializing the fact that they had to come out of leaven. But they understood what God was symbolizing here, and Paul understood that as well and shared it with the Corinthians and all of us. As you look at the Talmud and you look at Jewish teaching, it's interesting what it says. The Talmud talks about people and how they can't do what's right. They knew people couldn't do what was right. Why was that? Well, the answer is because of the yeast in the dough. They realized that the yeast in the dough represented something that was just common to human beings. It's common, and it's just a regular part of life for human beings. And they have the yeast in the dough, and they knew that yeast in the dough represents the sin element that exists in mankind. It exists in me and it exists in you, and it's just sadly a part of life. The aspect of not allowing leaven was not just at the days of unleavened bread, but as you looked at Israel as an example, no leaven was allowed to be in the sacrifices, in the grain offering. You could not offer leaven with those sacrifices. And it was not allowed to be burned on the altar. They concluded then that there must be more to it, and they equated it with a sin inclination in man. And that's just the way we are as human beings, influenced by the world around us. So leaven is something that is important to God, and it's something that we need to be aware of and battle against. Now, there's a fourth reason why we eat unleavened bread during this week. And that is what we're going to focus on for the rest of the sermon. So, in Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 3, it talks about unleavened bread. Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 3. And there it says, you shall eat no leavened bread with it, that is, with the Passover. So you're not to eat the Passover with leavened bread, you're to eat it with unleavened bread. And then it goes on to say, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread with it. That is the bread of affliction. That is the bread of affliction. And it says, for you came out of the land of Egypt in haste, that you may remember the day in which you came out of the land of Egypt all the days of your life. So we are to remember this bread of affliction. It's an important principle for us that we may not have thought about, but it is a very important part of the days of unleavened bread. The purpose of eating the bread of affliction is part of remembering the day in which we came out of the land of Egypt. It is a memorial. They are to eat the bread of affliction, and it is an odd term which we may not be used to. We are to eat the bread of affliction. And the Jews today at their Passover Seder, which they actually observe on the first day of unleavened bread, so they would be eating they would eat that today as opposed to our having kept it at Passover. When they uncover the matzos, the unleavened bread, they say, this is the bread of affliction. So at their Passover meal, they call that bread that they uncover as the bread of affliction. And note that it was the bread that their ancestors ate. Now, there's a dispute about that, and the question that is disputed is what they ate in Egypt on an ongoing basis, or when they left Egypt? So there's some debate about that. Deuteronomy 16 does mention that they came out in haste, and clearly it's talking about leaving quickly, so the bread did not have the time to rise. So today we're going to consider the unleavened bread as the bread of affliction and what that means for you and me, something that we can keep in mind as we go forward in our relationship with God. So the title of the sermon is The Bread of Affliction. So let's think about the Hebrew of Deuteronomy chapter 16 that speaks of the bread of affliction. And as you think of the Hebrew there, the word that it's translated afflict, it can be translated to do harm. It could also be called the bread of humility. And because of the tie-in with humility, it's been called the bread of poverty. So as you think about eating unleavened bread this week, it is the bread of affliction. It could be called the bread of humility or the bread of poverty. So what are we talking about here? Actually, this phrase occurs elsewhere in the Old Testament. So it occurs several different times there. And to help us better understand, let's look at 1 Kings chapter 22, verse 25. And we'll look at verses 25 through 28, where it talks about the bread of affliction, and it gives us a little bit more insight into what the bread of affliction is all about. 1 Kings chapter 22, verse 25. And there it says, and Micaiah said, indeed, you shall see on that day when you go into the inner chamber to hide. So the king of Israel said, take Micaiah and return him to Ammon, the governor of the city, and to Joash, the king's son. And say, thus says the king, put this fellow in prison and feed him with the bread of affliction and the water of affliction. And so, you know, prisoners sometimes are placed in prison and they're on bread and water and they don't get anything else. You're on bread and water. And that was the case here. And so they put him, Micaiah, in prison, and he was to be on the bread of affliction and the water of affliction, it says, until I come in peace. But Micaiah said, if you ever return in peace, the Lord has not spoken by me. And he said, take heed, all you people. So in regard to the bread of affliction, observant Jews only eat matzos made of flour and water. So you don't have onion matzos, you don't have egg matzos, you have matzos made out of bread and water. They're plain, they're simple, it's a simple food. And can we say absolutely that we can't eat egg matzos or onion matzos during the feast? Well, I don't think you can prove that from the scriptures, but that's how the Jews interpret it. So it's just a very plain bread, the simplest bread possible. And it, as you look at Deuteronomy 16, it mentions haste. And so they had to do with the leavening, that had to do with the leavening issue. And so they had to make this simple bread, out of flour and water, and it was called the bread of affliction. And from talking to people over the years in the church, they consider matzos to be definitely the bread of affliction. I mean, it's just so plain, and there's not any taste to it. And there are people that really don't enjoy matzos during the days of unleavened bread, and that's okay. It says to eat something unleavened during the days of unleavened bread, and it may not be matzos, because usually if you're eating just the simple ones, they take every bit of saliva out of your mouth, and so you're kind of gagging on them, and that's just the way they tend to be. So anyway, we found miracle things like putting butter on it does help it, and making sure we have water close by as we take those matzos. Now let's look at something going forward in regard to Israel and the end of the age. And this is in the context of the Great Tribulation. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 30. And will give us a little bit more insight into the bread of affliction. Isaiah 30 talks about the afflictions of Israel that they're going to have, they've endured throughout their history, and they're going to have to endure, especially at the end of the age. So that's something that is going to be upcoming for the people of Israel as we come to the end of the age. And let's begin in Isaiah chapter 30, verse 18. Isaiah chapter 30, verse 18. There in that verse it says, "Therefore the Lord will wait, that he may be gracious to you. Therefore he will be exalted, that he may have mercy on you, for the Lord is a God of justice. Blessed are all those who wait for him, for the people shall dwell in Zion at Jerusalem. You shall weep no more." So this is something that's to eventually work out for the people of Israel, because they're going to be enslaved. It's going to be a very bad time for them. And they are going to eat the water, the bread of affliction. And they are going to suffer, it says. And they're going to have no place to look but to God. No place. And life is going to be hard as the end of the age comes about. But there's the reassurance that God is going to eventually provide for them. And it goes on in chapter 30, verse 19, "For the people shall dwell in Zion at Jerusalem. You shall weep no more. And it says, God will be gracious to you at the sound of your cry. When he hears it, he will answer you." And this sound of their cry ties back to the time when Israel cried out to God because of the oppression they were suffering in Egypt. And the people of God are going to suffer at the end of the age, and they're going to cry out to God. They're going to finally realize that all the things we wanted haven't worked out. And here we are with the bread of affliction, suffering in oppression, suffering enslavement, and the only hope that we have is for God to intervene on our behalf. We have no place else to turn. And God hears their cry and will intervene for them. Isaiah chapter 30, verse 20. Isaiah chapter 30, verse 20. It says, "And though the Lord gives you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, yet your teachers will not be moved into a corner anymore, but your eyes will see your teachers." So this is a verse that we often quote at the Feast of Tabernacles, and it's talking about the people of Israel suffering in enslavement. And God is going to intervene, and God is going to take away the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, which he's going to allow to come their way for a while to teach them some lessons. And eventually, though, there will be teachers that will lead them in the right path, and that they won't be cut off from them anymore, but they'll have people that'll show them the right way. Verse 21 says, "You shall hear a word behind you saying, 'This is the way, walk in it,' whenever you turn to the right hand or whenever you turn to the left." And then verse 24, it says, "You will also defile the covering of your images of silver and the ornament of your molded images of gold. And you will throw them away as an unclean thing. You will say to them, 'Get away.'" Sounds like the days of unleavened bread. You're getting rid of those things. You're tossing them out. You're removing them, just as we get the leaven out of our houses. In the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, which Moses wrote, we are told this. And slavery is referred to in the Bible as affliction. It's referred to as affliction. And as you look at, go back to the time of Abraham, Abraham was given vision in Genesis chapter 15, and God told him, "Your descendants, about 400 years in the future, are going to be enslaved." They're going to be enslaved, and God told them they're going to be afflicted. They're going to be afflicted. And it says that they're going to be afflicted for quite a long time. They're going to suffer in the land of Egypt. And God, you know, eventually, as these days teach us, God did bring them out and took them to a land of promise. Let's look at Exodus chapter 1. Exodus chapter 1, and let's look at verse 11. So God told Abraham, "Your descendants, about 400 years in the future, are going to be in a land where they are going to be afflicted." And then in Exodus chapter 1, verse 11, it says, "Therefore they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with their burdens. And they built for Pharaoh supply cities, Pithom and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. And they were in dread of the children of Israel, because they expected, once we make their lives miserable and we oppress them and we enslave them, that it's going to kill them off." But it didn't work out that way, because God was with them and he protected them and watched over them. It didn't mean it was easy, but they actually thrived in a sense, because their population grew. And the Egyptians found that hard to understand. Verse 13, "So the Egyptians made the children of Israel serve with rigor." All right, if we make it harder for them, surely we'll thin out this population. Verse 14, "And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage." Their lives were bitter. "In mortar, in brick, and in all manner of service in the field, all their service in which they made them serve with rigor." And how did God remind Israel of the bitterness of the life they were living? Well, eat those bitter herbs with the Passover. Chapter 3, verse 15 of Exodus. Exodus chapter 3, verse 15. There it says, "Moreover, God said to Moses, 'Thus you shall say to the children of Israel, the Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. And this is my name forever, and this is my memorial to all generations. Go and gather the elders of Israel and together and say to them, the Lord God of your fathers, that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob appeared to me, saying, I have surely visited you and seen what is done to you in Egypt. I know I know what's going on with you. I know that you're being oppressed. I know that you're being afflicted. I know that. I've come down and I've seen it. I know that. And in verse 17 it says, And I have said, I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanites and the land of promise, and to a land flowing with milk and honey. It's sure, it's certain that I am observing what you're going through, and eventually I will give you relief and I will bring your people into the land of promise. But you know what? You know, it was a long period of time. He didn't do that right away. He said, that's coming. He told Abraham that eventually that would come, but you're going to suffer for a while. And that's the thing we have to keep in mind, that we live in a world in which we are going to suffer. None of us want to suffer. I don't, you don't. But God said, you may have to suffer. And we'll look at some scriptures that point to that. But there's coming a time when you're going to go to a land of milk and honey. That time is coming. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24. And look at some people here. We know, as you look at the subject, that there were people that did suffer. Hebrews 11 talks about that, and the fact that Moses, who led Israel out of Egypt, knew of that. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24 says, by faith Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And so you see that, and you don't really understand what that means. I didn't until somebody explained it. And the point is that Moses was raised in the daughter of Pharaoh's household. And as a result of being raised in her household, we've believed that he was heir to the throne while she had power. But eventually his stepmother, in a sense, lost power, and that option went away. But he was well educated by the Egyptians. He served in the army. He had all these things going for him, and at one point the option was available for him to enjoy all of the wonderful things that you could enjoy in Egypt. Moses also knew that he was a Hebrew. I mean, his mother had been the one that had nursed him. His mother had been with him, and she had told him. Okay, here's the story. Our ancestor Abraham pointed to the fact that we would suffer in the land, but there's a time when we're going to come out. So he knew that. And it says that he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, refusing all the blessings and all of the opportunity in Egypt. Verse 25, choosing rather to suffer affliction. All right, if you had all of the wonderful things in Egypt offered to you, would you turn it down? You know what? I want to suffer affliction with my people. That's a tough call. But Moses said, I'm going to choose that path. And he says he esteemed the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked to the reward. Wait a minute. As you think about that, Moses lived in 1400 B.C., and yet it says that he esteemed the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. Christ is 1,400 years in the future. But he knew about it. He knew that the Christ would come. He knew that that was something that was available to him if he followed God. And so he chose the reproach of Christ. And this is made notation of for you and me. And the question is, will we choose the reproach of Christ? And I think that the challenge on that is coming sooner than later. Verse 27, Hebrews chapter 11, verse 27, it says, by faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he be destroyed. He who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, whereas the Egyptians attempting to do so were drowned. So Moses understood the reproach of Christ. Did all of the people of Israel understand that? I don't think so. But they at least were willing to listen to Moses to the extent that they put the blood on their doorpost and on their lintels, and God spared them. And this, as you think about this, we understand the reproach of Christ. We understand what that signifies, and this is a key part of this sermon about the bread of affliction. Not fearing the wrath of Pharaoh, who represents Satan, he chose a different path. And this is a very powerful message for all of us as we keep the days of unleavened bread. See, Christ is the unleavened bread. He is the bread of life. Are we going to choose him? Or are we going to just go along with the world and refuse to suffer? The bottom line, we need to be accepting the affliction and the reproach of Christ rather than all the goodies that the world offers us. Actually, we are to accept the bread of affliction, the bread of slavery, and think about the bread that they normally ate in Egypt. If the bread of affliction is a term that is applied to just their common bread while they were in Egypt, we would think that very strange. Why does God have them as they are escaping Egypt? Why is he having them eat bread that is like the bread of slavery? Why is he having them go through that? Well, the first reason would be there is a common factor. If you think about it, the issue is leaving behind Egypt in haste. There's no time for resting. You've got to get out of the land. And we might think about that. That's not something we often think about, but probably we should. We need to come out. It's not something to, you know, like, what did Lot do? You need to get out because God's going to destroy this city. What's Lot doing? Dawdling around, and they made no effort to get out. So the angel said, look, you got to go. So you're not moving to get out, so we're going to grab you by the arm and we're going to escort you out, which they did. Thankfully, God was merciful. So unleavened bread, in that sense, was the common bread for the people of Israel. And so as we go through life, we got to think about, you know what? We need to leave this place behind. So what bread are we going to eat? Are we going to eat the bread of affliction? Yeah, but I don't like matzos. Well, maybe we should eat a few more, you know, at least in a sense of it being a type for us to understand. When you think about this, it talks about eating the bitter herbs with the Passover lamb. And, you know, their enslavement was bitter. It wasn't pleasant. And, you know, I think about this and you think, well, you know, this doesn't apply to me at all. Because I was born in 1951. And from 1951 to present, it's been the best time in the world. We've lived comfortably. We've had one blessing after another because we've lived in this land. We've enjoyed it. And sometimes it's easy being comfortable. I mean, I like being comfortable, but that's what we got to realize. We got to go. I've got to go. You've got to go. And we got to take this seriously. Yes, been comfortable, but the comfort's coming to an end. And we need to say, you know, I need to move along and follow God as he leads me. You think about the time of their departure from Egypt, and God tells us that Israel came out with a high hand. That means God was with them, and God opened the way for them to come out. And life was hard in Egypt, but think about it. They're going to come out of Egypt. God's going to allow them to come out with a high hand and triumphantly in a sense. But guess what? They're not going to the airport in a taxi or a bus and getting on a plane and flying out. As far as I read it, they walked out. And if you know anything about Egypt, there's a little strip between the Nile River and out a short fairly short distance, and beyond that, it's hot. It's dry. And there's no fun being out there. And yet God said, okay, we're going to walk out of here. I'm going to lead you. And you know what? He blessed them in the sense that he covered them with the cloud in the day, and he gave them fire by night to give them, allow them to be able to see. But you know, if you've, you know, I realized after I moved to Texas that when you mow your lawn at noon, it's hot. You may have recognized the same thing. But you know, one thing that I did realize is when a cloud comes over, it makes it a little bit better. So I like the clouds. And if it's cloudy, I'm going to go out and mow my lawn if I have to do it. But that's what God did. He provided that cloud for them, and it didn't solve it all. It was still hot, but it wasn't as oppressive. So they began walking out of Egypt, and it's something that we have to think about. They were free, but life didn't suddenly get better. Yes, they came out with a high hand, but to what? They're walking out of the land. They got a ways to go. 6 days of hiking before they get to where God's going to allow them to cross. And as they're walking out of the land, what did they come to realize? Hey, wait a minute. We're not just walking out. Pharaoh's after us. And he's going to do his best to force us to go back into slavery. And when they recognized that, there was panic among the people of Israel. And you know, as they moved beyond the land of Egypt and they crossed the Red Sea, did life get better? Just take some time to look at the Red Sea and what's to the east of it. It's called desert. It's called wilderness. So yes, we crossed through the Red Sea in one of the greatest miracles in the history of mankind. And yet, where are we at? We're still in the wilderness. It's still flaming hot. It's still dry. It's rough. It wasn't the lap of luxury. And what did God provide for them to eat? Manna. God didn't bring Dairy Queen or Whataburger. He didn't bring any of that. You had manna. And we don't know exactly what that is, but it provided nourishment for them. And so God provided it every day. And you know what they said? Oh, this manna. And it became so routine they didn't appreciate it. But God provided it every day for them. So they didn't come out to an easy life. They didn't come out to a big banquet. They came out to a difficult situation. And yes, they were free, but life didn't get better all of a sudden. So they didn't have a big banquet, but they were out of the land. They were free, and God did provide for them. So Leviticus chapter 23, and you might think about this in the sense of it also ties in with the Feast of Tabernacles. The Feast of Tabernacles. Let's go to Leviticus chapter 23, verse 42. And there's a tie-in between them leaving Egypt and a tie-in with the Feast of Tabernacles. Leviticus chapter 23, verse 42. And look at what God tells us in conjunction with the Feast of Tabernacles. Leviticus 23, verse 42. It says, you shall dwell in booths for 7 days. All who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So it says that they're to dwell in booths. So what did that mean for the people of Israel? They'd crossed the Red Sea. God had brought them through that. And now they're going to dwell in booths. So what was that? That meant you're on a camp out. You're on a camp out. You're going to be dwelling in tents or lean-tos or something like that. So life still wasn't easy. You're free from the Egyptians, but God didn't put you into the lap of luxury. And I know for me, going to the Feast of Tabernacles, I've never felt that the Feast of Tabernacles was going to be enjoyable as a camp out. Now, some of you like camping, and I like camping in a certain context, but I prefer a condo. I prefer nicer accommodations, something called air conditioning, especially here in Texas. It doesn't matter if it's October, it's still flaming hot. I know last year we had a family day at Bastrop, and we thought, well, it'll be nice to go out to the farm. How many of you went out to the farm there? Was it hot? You bet it was. And we got out there like, what? We thought it would be more pleasant, but unfortunately, it was hot. So couldn't control that. But, you know, as we go through this, we realize that it's a camp out. And God allowed that to be the case, that it wasn't going to be the lap of luxury. And I don't think, you know, if I can enjoy the feast, I know in Big Sandy, I felt I'm not going to camp at the feast in Big Sandy. Some of you have camped at Big Sandy. Well, you know, one of the byproducts of camping at Big Sandy is that it's sandy. And you will have sand in your shorts and in your food and all around, no matter what. You can't get away from it. You have it in your, you know, and you're putting on your suit to go to church and all that. So I'm not making fun of it. I'm just saying that realistically, for weaklings like me, that's a little hard. So anyway, we can go to the feast and we save our second tithe and we can enjoy it, and we should. And we should. But we also have to realize that for Israel, when they came out, it was a camp out. And that's something we need to remember, that that's what we're doing, is we're living in temporary dwellings. So we're told that that this was not always easy. It says, and even after the Red Sea, it was still difficult, and they still had to walk to the land of promise. And then let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 1. God in this process is teaching us certain things with the bread of affliction. He wants us to understand certain things. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 1. There it says, every commandment which I command you, you must be careful to observe, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land of which the Lord swore to your fathers. And you shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness. And that's what he's doing right now with you and me. He's leading us through the wilderness of this world. He's leading us every step of the way. And what's the point? It says, to humble you and test you to know what is in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. That's the point. To get the leaven out and to begin to continue to live God's way of life, to do so in sincerity and truth, that's what it's about. And he took Israel through the wilderness, and he's taking you and me through the wilderness, and he's teaching us certain things. And the experiences that we have that challenge us, the challenges that come our way, they're for a particular purpose. As it says, to humble you and to test you and to know what is in your heart, whether you would keep my commandments or not. Verse 3, so he humbled you, allowed you to hunger, and fed you with manna which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord. He says, your garments didn't wear out, your feet didn't swell. You should know in your heart that as a man chastens his son, so the Lord your God chastens you. Therefore, you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God, to walk in his way and to fear him. So as we walk on this journey, we've come out of Egypt. Christ has made it possible for us to come out of this present evil world, and we're undertaking this journey. And the reality is there's going to be adversity. And depending on every one of us who's been in the church a while, you know it's not always easy, isn't that right? So the question is, how will we deal with it? Will we apply God's commandments as we deal with it? What would be pleasing to God? What would be pleasing to God? Will we fold? This is just too hard. This is just too difficult. I can't deal with this. And I got a little sand in my sleeping bag. I'm out. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 11. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 11. The thought continues here about God leading us and where we're headed. And it says in verse 11, beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I command you today. Lest when you have eaten and are full, and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through the great and terrible wilderness, in which there were fiery serpents and scorpions and a thirsty land where there was no water. And God's taking us through all of this to test us, to humble us, and to test us. Why? Why does he send difficulties our way on this journey? The reason is for our good. As he says in verse 16, he says, to do you good in the end. To do you good in the end. That's the point. That's what this is all about. That's what this is all about. So we find this concept about being chastened in Hebrews chapter 12. We find that concept there. God brings this out, and it's right on the heels of chapter 11, where he talks about faith and walking in faith. Hebrews chapter 12, let's look at verse 1. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. And it says, therefore, Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. So guess what? Hebrews 11 is a wonderful chapter for us, and we can look at it, and we can see people who went through all sorts of ordeals and trials, and they stuck with it. They stuck with it. They didn't give up. They didn't quit. They stuck with it. And so we have these witnesses that are meant to be an encouragement to us. Encouragement to us to lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. He went through it for us. He set the ultimate example of laying down his life for you and me. He didn't quit. He was challenged. He asked God, hey, Is there another way we can do this? And God said, no, three times. He went back to God and he said, how about another way? And God said, a second time, no, and third time, no. And eventually he said, not my will, but your will be done. And he went through it. And that's got to be the way we look at it. Not my will, but your will be done. So if you want me to suffer, God, I don't want to. Is there another way? If that's what's required, then I'm willing to do it. And if it gets hard, what are we going to do? Are we going to give up? No, the joy has been set before us. God tells us this is the payoff if you endure to the end. It's laid out for us just like it was for Moses and Abraham and all of those who've gone before us. It was laid out and they saw it and they embraced it. And that's what we have to do. That's what we have to do as well. And it's not always easy, but God sends it our way to test us. He gives us the bread of affliction for a great purpose. So we have Christ's example, and we follow his example. And all of the things that Christ went through was for his good, and the things that we go through are for our good as well. So let's go to Matthew chapter 16. Matthew chapter 16, verse 24. Matthew 24, 16, verse 24. And he gives us the bottom line that we've all got to keep in mind. Speaking to his disciples, he said to them, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. We have to deny ourselves. And we have to accept whatever comes our way. And it may be affliction, it may be hard. And as we eat that unleavened bread, it is a reminder that this simple bread that we partake of at this time of year reminds us of the bread of affliction. And that affliction may be part of our lives. We would rather not deal with it, but if we do, good things will come. It's all meant for our good in the end. John 15, verse 11. John chapter 15, verse 11. Christ again is talking to his disciples. John chapter 15, verse 11. It says, these things I have spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you, and that your joy may be full. That is eventually going to come. And we have joy in affliction as we look to the end. We have joy in affliction because one of the things that we have to realize, let's say that it's smooth sailing every step of the way. I'd begin to have some doubts because if God doesn't afflict us, it means he doesn't value us. He's not working with us. But if he's working with us, there will be difficulty. There will be affliction that we'll have to deal with and cope with and endure through. That's the course that he's laid out for us. It's not going to always be easy sailing. But he wants us to make it. And he wants us to be a part of his kingdom. And so we have the reassurance. Let's look at one final scripture. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16. There we're told, therefore we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing. Yep, we're human. We're flesh and blood, and our outward man is perishing. But we don't lose heart because our inward man is renewed day by day. the truths and the reassurance that come from God's way of life are ours. And it says, for our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. What are we going to hold on to here that's so much greater than what God offers us? It says in verse 18, and while we do not look at the things which are seen, that's the world around us and all of the things going on, but at the things which are not seen, the things that are going to last forever. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. And the bread of affliction, what's it about? It's about our having eternal life and being in God's kingdom. And so we basically accept Christ as our Savior, and we accept what comes with that. And so we march on, and we continue to eat the bread of affliction, which isn't just something that we do for a week and then it's over. No, we may have to eat bread. We're going to eat the bread of affliction till Christ comes. So take joy in the bread of affliction and continue the journey until what God has intended for us is accomplished. So thank you all for being here on this day of unleavened bread.